reading from there in just a moment. Matthew chapter 5. We can get right into the study. I know this will have a has a time limit on it, a time frame, so we're going to save any kind of statements for our next study so we can get right into our lesson. We're going to spend this time in Bible class just looking at maybe four or five verses, not just a whole lot. Hopefully at the end try to make some applications for us. But let's just read the text, first of all. Matthew chapter 5. Start reading with me in verse 38. Familiar paragraph. Matthew 5, verse 38, beginning. You have heard that it's been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, that you resist the evil one. Whatsoever shall smite you on your right cheek, turn him also to the other. If any man will sue you at law and take away your coat, let him also have the cloak. Whatsoever shall compel you to go a mile, go with him too. Give to him that ask, and from him that borrows of you, turn not away. We recognize the Sermon on the Mount, and you may be familiar with Paul Earnhardt. He wrote a small booklet on this sermon. It was called something like a radical revolution, a radical something or another, but it was the idea of a radical change. Jesus taught this sermon with the idea of bringing about change in people. And those changes were very, very drastic. And that's what I want to look at. It's just the small little section of that. For a lot of people, being average is okay. And when it comes to maybe abilities, that could be a yes. But when it comes to using those abilities, if there's anything the parable of the talents taught, Jesus expects more than just average. He does require what we have. He does want the best that we have. And he's just not interested in mediocrity. But come on, are we? Are you really interested in that? I don't know what team you follow. I think I know where most people, I know where I'm at. But still, could you imagine your school, your team, whatever that might be, gets a new coach. And at the introductory press conference, he comes out and says, you know, I just hope we go 6-6. If we can make it to the Shreveport Independence Bowl, we're okay. Are you okay with that? I doubt that you are. Unless there's any closeted Vanderbilt fans here, no, you're probably not okay with that. Mediocrity isn't, we're not interested in that. And yet we somehow think that the Lord is. That we can just throw him a 6-6 life, and he's okay with that. Deep down, I know that we know better, but it's just sometimes life can delude us from that. So what was to look at some of these radical demands right here? That's what we're looking at in this first lesson. Jesus does make some demanding teachings, not just in this sermon, throughout the gospel. Let's just remind ourselves of that, and at the end, I hope we're just going to make some applications of how it might affect our life. But in verse 38, just to work our way slowly through the text, you have heard an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Let's make sure we understand that in the context in which it was given. If you're interested, when you get home, I have some homework for you. You know, this text, Jesus is quoting from Exodus 21, Leviticus 24, and Deuteronomy 19. Think about that. This statement, it's all through the Pentateuch. It's just all through the Torah. And it was just repeated, and it was repeated, and it was repeated. But the intent of it was to establish for what we might call some precedent concerning judicial sentencing. That was the intent of it. And we're familiar with that. If you're my age or older, you'll remember back in, I guess it was the late 80s, you remember the tort reform thing that was going on? Because juries were handing out just these outlandish the settlements. The one, I guess, that became maybe the poster board for it was that person that bought the coffee from McDonald's, carelessly spilt it on themselves in the seat, and then sued them because it was hot. And they got multiple millions of dollars out of that. And people began to realize, we've got to do something. We've got to do something to put an end to these type things. And tort reform came about. That's kind of a present-day example of what of what the statement was. It was to prevent these incredible things to be done. It was out. It was setting limits, parameters on how judgments could be passed. But by the time Jesus is teaching, by the time of this statement, by the time of this sermon, it had been loosened to justify retaliation. They had taken it out of its context and they had just broadened it out to the point where you've got this just non-ending cycle of basically justified retaliation. And Jesus is trying to get from the letter of the law to the spirit of the law. He's trying to get them to change. He's trying to bring a radical change of hearts. And it's interesting how he does it in verse 38. You've heard this, verse 39, but I say unto you. Look at the very last statement as the Sermon on the Mount ends. Go to chapter 7. No, chapter 5, 6, and 7 is the teaching itself. And then at the end of it, you get this one little sentence that kind of lets us know he kind of blew their mind a little bit. Teaching like they had never heard before. In Matthew chapter 7, verse 29, that very last sentence, he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. In verse 28, it says he astonished them. When he got through with this, they just sat there with their mouth wide open. We've never heard anybody teach like this. He doesn't teach like the scribes. He teaches with authority. Now, the first thing, don't look down on the scribes because they didn't teach with authority. They didn't have authority. They had no right to pretend or to teach as if they had authority. Here's the best they could do. Moses said. Ezekiel said. Joshua said. That's the best they could do. You know what the best I can do? The best David can do? The best Ryan can do? The best anybody who's trying to teach from the Bible can do, that's all we got. Paul by inspiration said. Peter by inspiration wrote. Luke by inspiration said. That's all we got. Jesus wasn't bound by that. You have heard it said, but I say. He did teach with authority. He did teach differently, and they recognized it. So what are some of these radical changes he was authoritatively leading them toward? Go back to verse 39. Let's just kind of work our way through and try to put some of the context with it, some of the things they would have understood maybe in the moment that time has taken from us. And in verse 39, I say unto you, resist the evil one, and if someone smite you on your right cheek, turn to him the other also. Let's just real quickly work our way through some of these. Honor has always been a serious thing. We're not the first ones to not like to be dissed. But there's a reason we have the common saying, that was a slap in the face. Have you ever heard somebody say, that was a punch in the face? It might hurt worse to be punched. There's something, an open-faced slap, open-fisted slap, dishonor. Add to it, I hope I'm not adding too much to this, but in verse 39, it talks about the slap coming on the right side of the face. Most people are right-handed. If you're slapping somebody, where are you going to slap them? Most people's going to get slapped on the left side. So it might be that this is inferring not just a slap, but a backhanded one. Think about that if you worry so much about honor and respect. And Jesus is saying, instead of retaliating, give them the other. Does that sound easy to you? Is that pretty demanding, you think? In verse 40, again, we have to go back into their time period for this to understand it. But if any man would sue you at law and take away your coat, also give him the cloak. Newer versions are going to, for that word, that first one there, it'll be like tunic. That's the idea. If they sue you for the tunic, give them the outer garment. Give them the heavier one. You may have seen some pictures. You'll have the long overflow in what we might call a shirt, but much, much longer. Then you've got the outer garment, the heavier garment. Go check this out. Another homework assignment for you. In Exodus chapter 22, it talks about, as part of the law, we don't know all the minutiae of the law because it's not our law. And so there's parts we might not be familiar with. First century Jews would have been familiar. It was against the law of Moses to take somebody's outer garment. You can go back to Exodus 22. If they owed you something, you could take it for the day, but at night you had to give it back. You had to return it to them. That was an outer garment. It was for warmth. They were not going to have to go through a night without it. You had to give it back. Go check it out. Exodus 22. What is Jesus saying? They can sue you for the inner garment. They can't take your outer one. Law forbids that. So offer it up. They can't take it. Can't force it. Can't ramrod it from you. Be willing to give it should it come to that. Does that sound demanding? Look in verse 41. Whoever would compel you to go a mile, go with them too. Here's the history of it. Rome, go check it out. Rome could compel basically 1,000 paces. It became 1,000 paces, if I understand right, was the law. It was referred to as a mile. I guess that would depend on how long your legs are. I mean, some people's legs, 1,000 steps for some would be longer than 1,000 steps for others. But a mile just became the catch for it. Imagine 2,000 years ago, you and I are alive, we're in Jerusalem, and a Roman soldier comes up to us and tells us to carry this load from here to there. Let's just pretend it's a day. You're not very busy. Maybe you're not on your way somewhere. Maybe there's not something pressing. Would you like it? Even though you're not very busy, would you like this Roman rule forcing you, compelling you to do this? Now, how many days is it that you don't have something to do? How many days is it you can just at the drop of a hat take off on this mile walk? I'm just trying to show us, even if things were good, even if you weren't busy, it still would have eat at you. And then if you were busy, now every step you took, spitting, whispering, fussing. If we didn't have the guts to say it out loud, we're doing it internally. What's Jesus saying? They can force you to go this. It's better to double it as composed to just this bitter, rebellious spirit of contention. How easy is that? Verse 42. Give to him that ask, and to him that would borrow, turn not away. That might have been a little bit easier for some of them. In the first century, giving of alms was kind of viewed highly. But if you keep on reading verse 43, he then ups the ante a little bit. I'm not talking about your friends. I'm not talking about your next door neighbor that you grew up with. Your enemy. Do the very same thing to your enemy. So the point of all of this and all of these examples is the idea of going above and beyond. And the point of all of them is these things that would have been trying maybe and things that might have been none of them done through that form of retaliation. That he goes back to verse 38. Here's what you've heard about it. Here's how I want you to apply it. And it was hard applications. Allow yourself with a slap. Allow yourself to be humiliated. We don't like that. Go above and beyond even what's required. We don't like that. We're okay maybe with the six and the six, right? Go that extra mile. Show generosity even to people who don't show it to you. None of those are easy. And we've struggled with this stuff for 2,000 years. That's a lot of heat in four verses, isn't it? And I understand in looking at these that they don't exactly apply apples and apples to our culture. I get that. Now, there's no compelling of 1,000 steps for us. I get it. But come on. We can stretch our application to the point where we can see they might not apply to us as they were written, but this attitude he's trying to develop is a long, long way from our culture's position that it's all about me. It's all about what's best for me. We're going to talk about it in the next hour. We're going to talk about self and how that can pollute so, so much. The idea that, you know, nobody can tell me what to do. The idea of, you're not going to take that, are you? I don't know how many times I heard that in the neighborhood I grew up in. You're going to take that? Yeah, Jesus says we take it. But that's not easy. And that's demanding. And so what we might tend to do is we brush them off and we say, okay, yeah, that sounds good, but you do understand that's just preacher talk, right? You do understand that we surely aren't, you're not expecting me to live like this, do you? Actually, Jesus does expect us to live like that. It's exactly the spirit he expects us to live under. And it's the exact spirit that he set as an example for us. Just looking at the crucifixion period alone, you know, the hours before it, there were some slaps. All right. There was one of the Gospels has the account of the one who they covered his face, they had him masked up, and a man comes up to him and slaps him. And then said, if you are who you said you are, tell me my name. Who am I? Have you thought that man's going to stand before the Lord one day? You imagine? You are the one that slapped. If there was some slapping, or if there was no retaliation, there were insults, but there's no returning of insults. After his death, there was parting of garments. And do you really think of those four Roman soldiers that there was a discussion made of, hey, you know, hey guys, the Jewish law says something about, hey, we don't need to take this coat. I don't think that's supposed to be taken. Stop it. Yeah, he gave up what he didn't have to give up, and it went a lot deeper than garments. Father, forgive them. Sounds a little bit like an extra mile, huh? Went a little farther than 1,000 paces, wouldn't you think? And then ultimately, the giving of blood. Again, far deeper than some giving of a tunic. Giving of blood. Yeah, he does expect it of us. Look in 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2. First Peter 2, read with me verse 23. He's speaking of Jesus, verse 23, who when he was reviled, he reviled not again. He must have not been at the synagogue the day eye for an eye and tooth for tooth, right? No, he just knew how to apply it properly. When he was reviled, he reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not. Catch this, remember this, but committed himself to him that judges righteously. Instead of this reaction, he committed himself to a righteous judge. But that was Jesus, okay? Now turn to chapter 4. How do we get into this equation? 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 1. For as much then as Christ has suffered for us. Okay, we got that information back in chapter 2, right? As much as Christ then has suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourself likewise with the same mind. New aversions say with the same attitude. No, don't think that we are immune to this. Don't think that was his part of it and we have nothing to do with this. No, he expects us to imitate. Chapter 2, here's what he did. Here's how he did it. Chapter 4, he's expecting us to do the same thing. And here's the beauty of it. And this might explain maybe why we're not there. In chapter 2, he didn't revile. He didn't return the pain for pain. He committed himself to the one who judges righteously. Chapter 4, verse 1, he says, now you take on the same attitude. Look in the last verse, verse 19. Maybe here's our holdup. Maybe here's the bottleneck. 1 Peter 4, verse 19. Therefore, let them that suffer according to the will of God commit the keeping of their souls to him as unto a faithful creator. Maybe that's the problem. Jesus in chapter 2, when he was going through his suffering, says he committed himself to a righteous judge. He calls on us to have the same attitude, and then he tells us how we can do it too. Commit yourself to a faithful creator. Maybe our commitment isn't what it ought to be. Maybe some of these demands we're just not very committed to, nor are we committed to the one who made the demands. Maybe there's the problem. Maybe there are some reasons why we don't like some of the demanding teachings that Jesus gave. Because there's a cost to them. Go back to Matthew 5. Before we start making applications. Matthew chapter 5. Kind of a humbling question. Well, no, it's not kind of, it is. It's a humbling question. Matthew chapter 5, verse 47. Look about halfway down the verse. What are you doing more than others? Man, that's a question that'll just kneecap you. That's a question that if we let it, can gut us. Here we are. What are we doing more than others? I don't cuss. What are we doing more than others? And we can carry that question out for eternity. What are we doing? Because there are some demanding things that we might be holding back from. And so what I want us to do, after having looked at that just those four or five verses, try the best that we can in the next 10, 15 minutes, whatever we've got, to just see how far we can get in this little bit of time, just asking some questions, reminding ourselves of some demands, reminding ourselves of expectations, reminding ourselves of some responsibilities, and then that underlying statement, what are we doing? How are we doing? What more are we doing than others? Turn back to 1 Peter chapter 1 and let's just talk initially about just a holy life. 1 Peter chapter 1, application time. We've looked at some text. Now it's time to kind of bring some pain. Now's the time for reflection and self-assessments. 1 Peter chapter 1, gird up the loins of your mind. You familiar? That's an old King James phrase. Gird up your loins. You familiar with what that text means? Girding up is where we get our word for girdle. We know what girdles do. Girdles hold things in place. Girdles keep things tight. And those outer garments that they used to wear, they would flow down. They would have gone below the knee. And they would have been cumbersome if you're trying to work. If you're really busy and you're doing something, they're gonna interfere. So they would reach down, they would hold them up, and then shove them in to what we might call a belt. That was called girding up your loins. You've taken all that stuff and you have girded them up. Now you're unencumbered. Now you can move and you can move easily. They understood what it meant to gird your loins. Prepare yourself to work. Peter says, gird up the loins of your mind. Prepare yourself for work. But he's not talking about the garments. He's talking about the head, the heart, the brain, the thought, the emotion. Gird it up. Now, what do we have to be? What's so important that we have to prepare like that for? What's going on that our mind needs to be ready for? Gird up the loins of your mind. Be sober and hope to the end for the grace that's to be brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ as obedient children, not fashioning yourselves according to the former lust in your ignorance, but as he which has called you is holy, so you be holy in all manner of life. Because it's written, be ye holy, for I am holy. Don't let us dare try to water that down. It's a challenge, but it's an invitation, and it's an expectation. Here's what I want from you. I want you to be like me. Don't try to limit that. And if that's what we want to be, if that is the aim, if that is the demand, we better get our mind ready. That's not going to be easy. It's a lot harder than turning the other cheek. It's a lot harder than giving up an outer garment. It's a lot harder than walking an extra mile. Prepare ourselves for this. So what can we do? Speaking of this holy lifestyle, let's now just some quick hitters. Just see how far we can go before the bells ring. I doubt we'll get through. I just want to go, it's just how much can we hit in this time period? How about, let's just talk about modesty just a minute. Look in, are you with me? Still 1 Peter? Just flip over to 1 Peter 3. We're not going to go into a lot of detail on these. We're just going to try to broach them. Get them back in our mind with the question of what more am I doing than others? Do I blend in? Am I the opposite of a chameleon? When they're on a green leaf, they're green. When a chameleon's on a brown trunk, it's brown. They blend in. We got to be the opposite of that. We don't blend into the world. 1 Peter chapter 3, speaking of the adorning of this outer adorning. Remember that phrase, outer adorning, external adorning of the hair, of the gold, of the apparel. And then verse 4, he gives the contrast. He says, what I'm looking for is not that outer stuff, but the hidden man of the heart, that which is not corruptible, ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God, great price. Just compare, when you've got time, just compare verses 3 and verses 4. What Jesus said, what God is saying, and what the world says. In verse 4, there is something of a great price. In verse 4, there is something that is an ornament. In verse 4, there is something that is incorruptible. And it's not what's being referred to in verse 3. The gold and the silver and the jewels, those are not of great price in God's mind. Those are not permanent. Those are not the things that are incorruptible. And yet he's talking about modesty. So here's the root of it. Modesty is a heart issue, not a garment issue. Turn to 1 Timothy chapter 2. 1 Timothy chapter 2. I want to share the way that someone taught this to me. I thought it was a very valuable point. It may be the same one who taught me may have taught you the same way. So it might sound familiar to you. But modesty is about the heart. And living in the South, it's not okay to just be a little better than the culture. It's easy to blend. But we will never blend if the heart's right. Look in 1 Timothy chapter 2. In like manner, let the woman adorn themselves in modest apparel with shamefastness. Remember the word. Shamefastness and sobriety. Are you familiar with the phrase bedfast? I'll bet you know people who have been bedfast. You may have had family members that were bedfast. When we use the word bedfast, what does that mean? It means they're not getting out of the bed. They are tied to that bed. They're not separating from the bed. They are bedfast. What do you think shame fast means? It means that we are tied to that. We are. There's a sense of shame within us. And we are tied to it. We are connected to it. So here's the question. If internally we have this sense of shame, if internally we have this sense of understanding what God considers valuable and beautiful, and we won't wear things that would bring shame. But it's easy to blend. It's a demanding teaching. It's gonna put us opposite of the culture. It's gonna put us opposite of the fads. But who do we belong to? And what more are we doing than others? So for all of us, and guys, this isn't, I wish somebody had told me early on when I became a Christian, keep your shirt on. This is not just for women, guys. This is for saints. There is a sense of shame we are to have. There is a sense of modesty that we are to have. And we're not going to get it from our culture. And yet Jesus demands things of us. What about lasciviousness? Have the dances got less? I'm not sure how to say it. Have they gotten cleaner? I guess that's an easy way, isn't it? Have they gotten cleaner? Or have we just blended in? Hebrews chapter 13 speaks of the marriage bed that's undefiled. Satan is an expert at taking things God has deemed good. And then when Satan gets through with it, there's corruption. And especially for those on the campus, especially for those who are a part of campus life, it's easy to blend. In the world, it's expected. In the first century, it was expected that you slap somebody back. And Jesus taught contrary to that. In the first century, it was expected that you took that 1 mile fussing and complaining every step of the way instead of having a change of heart. Jesus taught contrary to that. Let's look at the passage, Hebrews chapter 13. So as you're turning there, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this tonight. Jared had mentioned there's going to be a teen study. We're going to look tonight at dating. We're going to look tonight at dating in preparation for marriage. We're going to look at tonight, Lord willing, things to look for in looking for a mate. I hope you'll be there for that. Any of the young ones that are still here, I hope you can be there for that. Hope it will be of value to you. Matthew chapter 13, verse 4, marriage is honorable in all, and the bed is undefiled. But fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. What more are you doing than others? Look in Romans chapter 1, homosexuality. Our culture more and more accepting of this. We live in a culture where it is now heroic and courageous to come out, while the chaste laughed at, scorned. Don't be surprised. God's always demanded things of his people, and those demands have always set them contrary to the world. But look in verses 26 and 27 of Romans 1. For this cause, God gave them up to vile affections, vile passions. Freeman is their women did change the natural use of that which is against nature. Likewise also men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another. Men with men, working that which is unseemly, receiving in themselves the recompense of their error, which is meat. Verse 32, who knowing the judgment of God, they which commit such things are worthy of death. Not only they, but those who have pleasure, those who consent with them that do them. Let me just pause and say, there is no amount of woke society that changes a word we just read. Not a word of it changes. What more are we doing than others? And how dare we be ashamed of anything that God taught? How dare we be ashamed to teach against what God taught against? Is it demanding? In our culture, I guess maybe it's becoming so. What more are we doing than others? Because blending's awful easy. But it's also awful condemned. What about divorce? Look in Matthew chapter 19. Matthew chapter 19. It's easy to blend. A divorce just makes you part of the minority or the majority, basically. Just to become part of the numbers. But when Jesus was asked about this in verse 9, he has a conclusion to it. Whosoever shall put away his wife, and I'll just pause and ask the question, who is whosoever? You remember John 3:16. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever believes in him. You know, do you know who has trouble with whosoever in John 3? Nobody has trouble with whosoever in John 3. We know what that means. It's the very same teaching. Whosoever puts away his wife, except it be for sexual immorality, and marries another, commits adultery. Whoever marries her that's put away, commits adultery. That's demanding in our culture. But Jesus had a lot of demands. What more are we doing? Stacy, is that the bell? Is that my cue? I'm sorry. 30 seconds. What about marriage roles? What about the nature of truth? Truth is not in and of itself. Subjective. And we get it in some things. You don't have to be a science major to know this. H2O, two elements of hydrogen, one element of oxygen, you've got water. That's true in America, and it's true in China, and it's true on the moon. 2 + 2 = 4. That's true in America, and it's true in Argentina, and it's true at the South Pole. There are things we understand are universally true. Don't think that there are scripture that's not universally true. We get it in other realms. Why do we miss it here? The focus of the local church on the spiritual, not the fleshly. What if we feed them? Then they die in their sins. What have we done? And what's the benefit of that? I'm sorry, I knew we were going to run out of time, but let's just pause with the question, what more are we doing than others? Because there are demanding teachings. And I've just tried to hit as many as we could in the time period. But let's have a word of prayer before we're dismissed. God and Father, we're so thankful to you for everything you do for us. You blessed us beyond what we deserve. You've been so gracious to us. We thank you for that. And we want to live our lives in service to you because of it. So please help us in that. We realize, Father, that because we are yours, that we are to be different. And because we are different, Father, help us to have the strength to be everything that you want us to be. Give us courage. Give us conviction. Give us a desire to please you in every single way and in the things that we find ourselves not where we should. Give us courage to change. Give us a desire to repent. And help us to come back to you in a way you've asked us to. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen.